Hello, everyone.
I'm Carl.
And I'm Em.
And welcome to our podcast discussing all of the latest books. This is season 2, episode 2, and we will be discussing The Nightingale by Kristen Hanna. We are so excited to have you guys back this season to listen. We have some updates on this season and our future plans. Stay tuned until the end to hear more about it. And as always, we'll be saving our ratings until the very end.
We promise to give you all of our honest opinions on all the characters, chapters, and scenarios. We don't mean any harm to any of the authors. This is solely our opinion. And as always, we promise to card them like we read them.
Period. As always, spoilers will lie ahead. Some trigger warnings for this book will include references to parent death, war, murder, starvation, gun violence, violence against children, violence against women, sexual assault, a pregnancy resulting from sexual assault, torture, anti-Semitism, Holocaust references, child death, blood, sexism, racism, homophobia. Everything you can imagine is probably included in this book. Of course, it is set in a time of war and a war that was caused a lot by hatred in general, one big hate crime. So very much that is a theme throughout. So as always, take care of yourselves.
Don't want to hear how this book ends? Please pause here, go read the book, and come back to this episode. And we will preface that with saying, make it through the first 11 chapters. It is worth it. It is very hard to get through the first 11 chapters, but it gives you so much that is important. So please, please, please bear with it, because we almost changed the book.
I'm just going to add that chapter 11 is where it picked up. The first 10 chapters were world building, setting the scene information. And then chapter 11, it picked up. I saw where the story was going. It was more interesting. So absolutely, please stick around because it's a really good read.
And that's saying something because Carly does not like historical fictions. So
this is my first. And I was the one that was like, Emily, I don't know if I can get through this. I hit chapter 11 and I was like, just kidding, we're reading it.
Yeah. All right, so you ready to get started?
Let's get into it. I'm going to read the blurb for the book. France, 1939. In the quiet village of Caraval, Vianne Mauriac says goodbye to her husband, Antoine, as he heads for the front. She doesn't believe that the Nazis will invade France, but invade they do in droves of marching soldiers and caravans of trucks and tanks and planes that fill the skies and drop bombs upon the innocent. When a German captain requisitions Vianne's home, she and her daughter must live with the enemy or lose everything. Without food or money or hope, as danger escalates all around them, she is forced to make one impossible choice after another to keep her family alive. Vianne's sister, Isabel, is a rebellious 18-year-old searching for purpose with all the reckless passion of youth. While thousands of Parisians march into the unknown terrors of war, she meets Gaetan, a partisan who believes the French can fight the Nazis from within France, and she falls in love as only the young can do, completely. But when he betrays her, Isabel joins the resistance and never looks back, risking her life time and time again to save others. With courage, grace, and powerful insight, best-selling author Kristen Hanna captures the epic panorama of World War II and illuminates an intimate part of history seldom seen, the Women's War. The Nightingale tells the stories of two sisters separated by years and experience, by ideals, passion, and circumstance, each embarking on her own dangerous path towards survival, love, and freedom in German-occupied war-torn France, a heartbreakingly beautiful novel that celebrates the resilience of the human spirit and the durability of women. It is a novel for everyone, a novel for a lifetime. When I first read that, I had such high expectations. Read the first 10 chapters and they were kind of dull because I assumed it would be action-packed from the beginning. So I think that's what I struggled with, was that expectation. It's not action-packed from the very beginning, but give it a minute and it will get there.
There's a before to the invasion.
Yes, correct.
I just discovered that her name is not Vivian, and it's Vianne.
The only reason I know how to pronounce their names is because I listened to the audiobook. I didn't read it.
Well,
So,
I thought it was Vivian the entire time. Like, if you go back and watch, I literally flipped open the book and was like, "Is
that's hilarious. Yeah, there's no second V, babe.
Yeah.
Well,
Again, tells you how much I pay attention.
and if I butchered any of the names or towns or anything, I apologize.
So we're gonna start off with Vivian. I literally wrote her
You're
name
gonna call her
Vivian in
Vivian the
here.
entire time?
It's in all of my notes, so it's possible.
We know who you're talking
Vian.
about. You can call her V. We know who you're
Okay.
talking about.
V and Isabel are living their lives in France when Germans and Nazis invade. As Vian's husband is sent off to war, she's left to fend for herself. Isabel travels to see the horrors to get to her sister, Vian. Isabel decides to join the rebellion, and Vian is forced to make life work with a German soldier living in her home. I actually wanted to first start off with the first paragraph that's in the book, because I do think it was a very powerful and impactful statement. It says, "If I have learned anything in this long life of mine, it is this. In love, we find out who we want to be. In war, we find out who we are. Today's young people want to know everything about everyone. They think talking about a problem will solve it. I come from a quieter generation. We understand the value of forgetting the lure of reinvention. Lately, though, I find myself thinking about the war, my past, and the people lost." This book is divided into a more current time and then the previous timeline. So the whole time you are getting a perspective of an older woman and her flashbacks, and you're not sure which sister it is the entire book. It's the last two paragraphs or the last two chapters that you actually end up finding out who the sister is. The rest of the book is talking about her story and her sister's story, and you don't know which sister it is, so you're going back and forth. It starts with the older woman being checked into a care facility by her son, Julian. She's up in the attic looking through an old chest of memories from what you believe is her former life or her former sister's life. She talks about her daughter and the chair in the corner, just a lot of memories up in the attic. She tells her son that is all she wants to bring with her. I think she says, you know, make it the last wish of a dying woman or something like that is what she refers to it as. Her son asks what happened. She starts getting these flashbacks of her story. The first story we come across is Vianne. So then we obviously think that it's possibly her that's telling the story. But then in other aspects, we go into Isabel first. It's kind of the flashback. So it's kind of hard to distinguish which one it is. So we get into Vianne's story, and she's a happily married teacher of a young daughter, and she's married to Anton, and she has been since she was 15 or 16 when she got married to Anton. And he is actually, they're talking about the war and kind of the things happening with German and France and stuff. And she promises her daughter that Anton's fine, that the war's not coming to them. And when she goes downstairs that evening, she discovers that Anton was chosen for duty. And so she has a really hard time with the thoughts of him leaving and possibly going into the unknown. But she keeps almost like this mantra of, oh, the war won't come here. You know, we won't ever see it. He won't ever see it. It'll be fine.
She definitely
Which,
lives in denial, I think, throughout
yes.
most of this book. That's how she coped. It shifts at one point, but through most of the book, she lives in denial.
Yes. And so we also get the perspective of Isabel, her sister, and she's a young girl. I believe she's 18, and she has been apparently living at different boarding schools. Her mother or their mother had passed away, and her father, in Isabel's perspective, basically pushed her out and kept her away from home. So Isabel ends up goes into her perspective at a boarding school. She apparently consistently keeps getting kicked out of these boarding schools for acting out. And so at this point, they're like, hey, you're 18, you're trouble. Go ahead and go on home. She arrives back in Paris where her father lives, which apparently he doesn't live too far from the Eiffel Tower, which I found really cool because I mean, we've both been to Paris. So, like, the little streets that are lining the Eiffel Towers, those old, you know, antique buildings and stuff like that are just gorgeous. So, I kept imagining there's specifically one corner where their potential house was. It was really cool to get that perspective as well.
No, I totally agree. I'm so glad that I have the context to sort of picture it even more. It was really neat.
When she gets to Paris, some bombings start happening with the Germans invading. Her dad ends up deciding that she's going to be sent away to live with Vivian, or Vian ends up getting sent with some neighbors, which Didn't seem like very nice people to be sending your daughter off with, but I
No.
mean, I desperate times call for desperate measures, I'm sure. As she gets sent with them, they end up stalling out on the road and she gets separated from them. She ends up deciding instead of walking along the roads like everybody else is to start going through the woods, which was probably a smarter decision because of the airplanes and things like that that start happening later. But as she goes across into the woods, she ends up coming across Gayton, who apparently was released from prison. And I guess
Gayton.
Gayton, same thing.
Gayton sounds like, I don't know, it sounds weird. I love
Well,
him.
Gaton, whatever. It sounds like a baton whenever you say his name like that. He was released from prison, which they started releasing everybody with the hopes that they would help protect the country. I don't know why they would think a bunch of criminals would, the country put them in jail, would do that. But I mean, obviously, I'm sure they probably use the prisons and things like that as like emergency hospitals and stuff as well. So obviously, at that time, there was other uses that needed to be done for, I'm sure, a prison.
I love the concept though of just like releasing all prisoners and just hoping that what they'll do is join their side. I
Well, and
love that
apparently he was
concept.
arrested for being a communist too. So for the fact that he basically was betraying their country in that aspect, they would all of a sudden think that he would
Yeah. It just
support the country
doesn't
and
make
defend
sense to
them.
me. I would like to look into it and see if that really did occur, and if it did occur, how successful it was or may have not been. Do we even know? It's just fascinating, almost like a social experiment that I would like
I
to know more about.
vaguely remember hearing that in school about how they had released people from prisons, but I don't remember it being this early in the war, in
Gotcha.
my opinion, if I remember correctly. Don't quote me wrong, because I didn't do great in social studies, so but
Well, and this wasn't like, I feel like we get taught more the wars that actually happened on our land as opposed to the ones that happened away from home.
yes.
I don't feel like I know it. The main thing that I recall was just the brutality and the way that the Jews were treated. Like, that's what I recall from this war. This was an interesting perspective to see the people in France and what they might have endured through this time, especially women. I'm all about reading a woman's story anyway, so this was really cool for me.
I think one of the memories I have going to DC was going to the Anne Frank house that's there. And then my mom and I actually really wanted to go to the Jewish Memorial when we were there, but we weren't able to go. My mom's very fascinated with the history and stuff with World War II. So it was very interesting to kind of get that insider perspective. And I really wish, mom, if you're listening, you would finish reading this book because I really think you would like it.
I went to Amsterdam last year and it was on our list to go to the Anne Frank House in Amsterdam. And unfortunately, we didn't get to. But that would have been really cool to have that context while reading this. I own her diary, but I haven't read it.
We
So,
read it in school.
did you? We did not. The thing that I remember from this era, or when we learned about this specific war, is watching the movie The Boy in the Striped Pajamas.
We
Oh,
watched The
you have.
Diary of Anne Frank, the movie.
Have you watched The Boy in the Striped Pajamas?
I have seen snippets of it, but I don't think I've ever watched it all the way through.
It's engraved in the back of my brain, and I could project it for you
Isn't
right
that
now,
a
the
pretty,
entire
like,
movie. It's awful. I watched it in the 9th grade in school, and I had to get tissues. I was like, I'm gonna have to go to the bathroom because I can't keep it together. This is so sad, but it is so good. So if you haven't seen that, anybody, I recommend watching
definitely.
that. It definitely portrays it in a way that it's horrifying what they did.
So, in the context as well, that we also get that her name means nightingale, which ends up becoming pretty substantial later. And that's also where the title of the book kind of comes from, as well as the meaning behind her last name in the future. So, her and the soldier, or this prisoner that ends up becoming a general surgeon, like a soldier of some sorts. So they end up deciding to travel together and they end up on a road where Germans start opening fire on people that are traveling through. And so basically it becomes almost like a mob where they're running to this town. And Vienna's outside whenever the first group of people arrive. And she is told after feeding them that she needs to get inside, lock her doors, that people are coming, and she sees off in the distance this giant crowd coming. And I know this sounds really bad, but it almost reminded me of a Walking Dead kind of situation where these people are starving to death and coming.
I definitely agree. I pictured a zombie mob coming up the road, and like, I got tickled though thinking like how slow zombies move.
Yeah.
And like, just like in my head, I pictured like this slow motion and Vianne's just sitting at her door watching them. It was so weird in my head. I would have liked a little bit more graphic detail to set the scene better. This, the zombie mob didn't make any sense, and it took away from the severity of the scene for me.
Yeah, and the people were supposedly banging on her door, covered in blood, dehydrated, starving. Some of them, I'm sure, traveled even farther than Paris to come to this town. So Isabel and her kind of end up at the end where they are both starving, dehydrated, and they end up deciding to stay in the barn overnight. And very quickly, Isabel declares her love for Gaston. It was very weird. It was very quick. However, I don't think she ever really was taught love or the value of love. So in her mind, someone caring for her and protecting her, I think, was her way of thinking that he loved her.
For me, describing that scene also would go in hand with describing how long they truly were on the road. I honestly couldn't tell you. That was my problem. I struggled putting it on a timeline. Did she say it was a week? Was it a month? Yeah. I couldn't place that part.
It seemed like it was the next day.
To another town. So I kept thinking, like, it couldn't have been that quick. But maybe it was. I don't know. So I struggled with that a little bit. I think that's kind of why I was disenchanted at the beginning, because there were parts that I wanted to be a little bit more clearer and set up the gravity of her having to walk from Paris to another suburb or to another town. How far is that? How many miles? Something to give me a sort of context of how difficult it was.
It seemed like it all happened within 3 to 4 days between her leaving Paris and arriving at Vianne's place. It seemed super quick. And basically she spent a day and a half with Gaten before she declared her love.
I know. I totally read it the same way. I just wonder if that was lost on us, and maybe that's not actually the timeline, you know?
Well, and it's very accurate. The first 10 chapters were really hard to get into. It was really hard to pick up on those smaller details as well. And honestly, me trying to go back and even type up notes, it was a little boring. I was trying to pull for certain things, but
yeah. I do like Gaten. I liked him from the moment she met him. I was like, okay.
He definitely didn't seem like a prisoner, like hardcore, you know, kind of person, but
not a murderer.
So Isabel ends up waking up the next morning and discovers that he had left her with a note. He declares he's going to go and fight. Isabel decides she wants to try to go back and fight as well after a news broadcast tells France to surrender to Germany. They slowly start discovering more items are becoming unavailable. Communications are starting to be cut off. Food is really hard to find. They even describe things like shoes and stuff like that is really hard to come up with as well. And so Isabel, while Vianne is at work one day, decides to start hiding some of the family belongings because she has an idea of what's coming. And so she starts taking some of their valuables, some of their memories down to a cellar in the barn underneath the car to keep it from being captured, which was a good thing because within a few days afterwards, Captain Beck comes to billet at Vianne's house and gives them two options: forfeit your house so I can live here, or you live here with me and take care of me, basically. And so they decide to end up staying because it's been a house that's been in their family for, you know, a long time. And obviously Vianne's under the impression that that's where her husband will come back to find her and, you know, all that kind of stuff as well. And so Vianne basically makes a plea with Isabel to stay out of trouble because she knows she has a mouth on her and that it could cause issues. Isabel,
I kind of identified with Isabel.
Oh, wholeheartedly was you.
The whole time I was thinking, if I was in this story, I'd be Isabel. If I wasn't Isabel, towards the end, I identified with Sophie.
Yeah.
But throughout the whole book, I was thinking, I would want to be Isabel. I would hope that I'd be an Isabel doing something.
Wholeheartedly, you already are, so you don't have to worry about whether or not you would be. I'd be the one telling you to keep your mouth shut so we don't all die.
Oh, that's funny.
But Isabel decides to go ahead and leave so that she doesn't put Vian and Sophie into trouble, which Sophie is Vian's younger daughter. When she's leaving, she's actually stopped and told that she needs papers to be able to leave the area. And so Isabel decides, in kind of like rebellion, to vandalize some signs. And she is caught by somebody and they take her kind of over to a room. She ends up discovering that it's a group of people led by a guy named Henry who is asking her to help spread pamphlets around town. She decides, if I can't get out to help fight, this is what I'm going to do in the meantime. And
And I
so
just
she
want to add, I was warned before reading this book that there were sexual assault references. And so I just want to preface that this was the first scene that I thought, oh my gosh, that's what's about to happen. And for me, I like kept waiting for it to happen, kept waiting for the shoe to fall. The first reference to sexual assault is not till page 369 in my book. So just for you readers listening, if you haven't read it yet, it's not till really towards the end of the book. So you don't have to wait for the shoe to drop every 5 seconds for someone to be assaulted. I did, though. When someone told me that, every time it kept happening, like when she was pulled into the dark room by a man, I thought that's what's about to happen. But it doesn't happen till later in the book, just so everybody knows.
So she does decide to smartly kind of use her ration. Her sister tells her she needs to get a job and be in the line to get the food every morning. So she starts using that as a cover. She gets up really early, spreads the pamphlet, stands in line for the food, and goes back home. And just basically uses that cover almost, I don't know if it's daily, but it seemed almost daily. I don't know if they were spreading news of what was happening since they started taking away the radios, or if they were spreading, like, hey, come join us, come join the rebellion. I'm not quite sure what the pamphlets actually said. I don't think they ever mentioned what was actually detailed into it.
I think there was one pamphlet where it said that the Germans had put out this story of what had happened and it was a false front. And so these pamphlets then put out what actually happened. And I think these pamphlets, that's kind of how the community found out about the camps and stuff. I think that's what they were doing, putting out the true information and calling the Germans liars. I'm sure there was also probably a fight back on there as well to encourage people to fight back and join. But my understanding is it was correcting the misinformation that the Germans were spreading.
Gotcha, makes sense.
Which, if you think about it, they always underestimate a woman. I loved that she just walked right in front of their face. They knew she was mouthing and against them, and it still never crossed their minds that it could have been a woman. That's insane. I loved that every time. I was laughing at them in the background.
Well, and we do get this moment with Beck where he was kind of sweet on Vian and trying to help her find her husband. And she ends up learning that he had been captured and he was a prisoner of war. However, they were allowing him to basically receive letters and packages and things like that, which I found a little weird, knowing what they were doing to the Jews at the same time. It was odd to me that they were taking prisoners of war and allowing their families to exchange conversations with them.
Okay, let me ask, do you think, or wait, at the does he acknowledge at the end that he got her care packages?
He talks about how the letters were what kept him going and hearing from her.
Okay, I thought he did. But for me, when I was reading it, I was convinced that Captain Beck was lying. He was letting her do this so that she felt like she owed him.
It until I read one of the letters, and she talks about how something in that letter he would have only known. That was the part that I was convinced that was possibly not the case. But I think it was the second letter, the first one that she got back. I did kind of think it was him for a minute.
Yeah, I don't know. I was stuck on that. Like, is he really getting them? If he is getting them, are they being used to manipulate, torture? You know, these things. That's what I kept thinking about. Or is he doing it so that she's thankful and owes him? You know what I mean? Trust him. And like, we're building that false. I just kept thinking, you're an idiot. Stop doing it, Vian. It was astonishing to me. I agreed that they would take these literal soldiers, prisoners of war, and they treated them better than they treated innocent children simply because of their heritage. I was mad. Most of this book, I was angry and mad, and I wanted to hurt someone that belonged to the Nazis. I kept thinking of that Marvel scene where they talk about going back in time and just baby Thanos. That's what kept coming to my mind. And I think it's even referenced in It might be early on in either one of the Avengers movies, or maybe it's Captain America's movie. They're talking about Hitler and about what if we could have gone back in time or something. And that's all I kept thinking about, how mad I was. The emotional side and like the devastation did not hit me until later. The sadness, I was in anger for most of this book. Later, it hit me. It hit me like the last 100 pages. I was just sobbing. But right here in this moment, I just was so angry, like that they just felt so entitled.
I think that was the part we kind of talked about previously, where the way the book was written, it was hard for me to be mad at Captain Beck because he just seemed like he was forced into that role where you immediately were angry with him. And so I think it was a little harsh, but I also kind of read it with the knowing of almost like a foreshadowing that was hinted that Beck was so nice, but then what could happen if he dies would be so much worse, and what ends up happening was so much worse. And so I think there was a lot of that mindset I had reading it was like, oh, well, he isn't that bad, which is kind of a bad way of thinking about it. But at the same time, that's how the book was written and how it was set up was like he wasn't as bad as what it could have been. And so things like getting her husband the care packages and the letters and finding out where he is and all that kind of stuff made me kind of soft on a little bit. And I was like, then back in my mind, I was like, but he's a German soldier. You can't be soft on him. But I was like, he could be worse. So let's be soft on him. It was very hard to internally process that while reading it because she set him up as such a sweet character where
Yes.
you up front are not very trusting of anybody. And so it was really hard for
That's
you
fair.
to be soft on him whatsoever.
But listen, I think that right there is you read it as Vianne and I read it as Isabel. That's a perfect example, I think. Because for me, for the get-go, why are you being nice? Why are you complicit, though? You want to say you're a good guy, but you're complicit in all these awful things. So to me, you can't be a good guy. Like, that's how I read it. And you read it as it could be so much worse. And I don't disagree that it could be so much worse. But if the people who were actually against it didn't just go along with it, because they weren't just following orders, I think it would have changed everything. That's how I looked at it. And also, I didn't trust him. Even though he was being nice, allegedly, the moment something went wrong, he flipped. He cared more about himself than he did anybody else. And I believe that the entire time. And the fact that he believes his wife and child may not be subjected to the same things simply because he goes along with the orders is BS to me. I don't believe that. He may believe that, but I think that's an ignorant belief. I think that's naive.
But I
It's
think
not
so many
realistic. If
people.
everybody's starving, then your family's also starving.
I think so many people in the war, though, were, I mean, even Vianne and her mindset was just like, oh, the war won't come here. You know, oh, he's living in
Yes.
my house now, but it still won't come here. Oh, you know, he's dead now. You know, there'd be a better guy that moves it. It was almost just like constantly, like her mindset was, oh, it'll get better. And even whenever they first started taking the Jews out of their homes, they were just like, oh, we're just relocating you temporarily, you know, almost like for your safety is kind of what they implied. And so it was very much that same kind of concept as people were so naive in thinking that, oh, they're just doing what's best for us. Oh, they're protecting us. And really, when it came down to it, they were doing things selfishly. But a lot of people were thinking that, especially in those small remote towns, you're definitely not ever thinking that anything's going to come to your area because they're going to go for the big areas first. But what they don't understand is that it starts in the big area, but it slowly just starts expanding outwards and, you know, goes from there. So.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I do have some sympathy that Captain Beck was put into that position in the first place, and that is a hard decision to make one way or another. Do you risk it? You might die and leave your family worse off, or do you try to do everything possible to protect them? I understand and I sympathize with that decision. I disagree the way he went about it, and I would hope that if I were put in that position, I would stand up for what I believe in. I'd rather die by my morals than die a coward. That'd be what I left my children with their legacy. That's just a personal opinion. Other people may not. Captain Beck obviously didn't. He thought the better way was to play along and do what he could, little things here and there for his kids or whatever. But I think that's interesting because the whole point of war is how it works. Everyone is put into this situation and you have to make hard decisions, and what you do impacts the war. I mean, I think all of the French soldiers that were complicit with the Germans and the Nazis, what if it would have been different? So I think that's like at the end of the day what kept coming back to me, like, how could you be okay with that? And you can see the little girl in this house and how she's suffering. So I think that's what the anger, the mistrust, that kept me in this book because I wanted to know what happened, wanted to know how it turned out. I wholeheartedly agree that it got worse when Captain Beck left, and I wanted to kill that man with my bare hands that comes in the house next.
Yeah, I agree. One of the things that he does that I did start to kind of have an opinion change is when he asks Vian to provide a
Like the
list of
list.
anyone she knows in town that are Jews, communists, homosexuals, Freemasons, and Jehovah's Witnesses. I was like, don't give him the list. But at the same time, he was, especially like Rachel said, whenever she went to go tell Rachel, you know, what happened, she admitted to her that she gave her name on the list. Rachel was like, well, I've flaunted it all over town. I've made it clear that I'm, you know, proud of my faith. And so she was like, you know, it would obviously have been uncovered anyways. Teachers slowly start being dismissed from their jobs and other public jobs. They're saying that Jews can't hold those public things. They start dismissing them from like owning the butcher shop, different things in government, like mayor, they start dismissing them from their positions and taking them away, which I just find that crazy that how are they supposed to survive and live, which I don't really think they cared. But at the same time, that was my first thought. How are they going to make it? Especially because Rachel had two kids, you know, a young girl and the young boys.
I think that's what bothered me is that one of the first things too that really bothered me is her making the list. And like she left Rachel off and he pointed out you're missing someone. But if you know that, then make your own damn list. Leave
Yeah.
me out of it. That's what I would tell him. I'd tell him to shove it. He could
I
make
think
his
it was
own
almost a
list.
test for her, and she just
She failed.
naively, yeah,
She
failed.
passed. She passed in his point of view. She failed in
Yes.
my point of view.
Yeah.
And I get it. Again, what you do to survive, what you do to save your children. I'm not necessarily judging her, but I was disappointed. It made me mad though that he would even come home and ask her to make a list. If he's supposedly this good guy, let somebody else make a list.
Yeah.
Make your own list and claim she made it. But why are you putting her in that position?
Yeah.
That bothered me. I wasn't a fan of his.
So Isabel does ask Beck for a pass to go nurse her father, which Vian knows is a lie, and she actually believes she's running off to be with a man, and Isabel kind of goes along with it, almost as her cover, but she is actually going to deliver a message to the rebellion in Paris. Isabel travels to Paris to help the cause, and Vian is fired for speaking up. Vian struggles to keep herself and her daughter fed. Isabel starts helping pilots travel across the mountains to rejoin the fight. They begin watching the Jews being deported, and Vian decides to step up.
I think that was the part that really got me. Once they started rounding up the people of Jewish heritage and putting them on a train, and you watch them shoot a woman while she's holding a baby, and you know
Yeah.
what they're saying is a lie. Like at this point, we know there's camps. I think that's where, if Vian hadn't started to do something, I would have been really, really mad with her.
Yeah,
I'd have been very
agreed.
disappointed. This is the first scene that made me sad and made me cry, the scene with Sarah.
Yeah.
And you,
So
how do you come back from that? Like, how do you see that and not, I don't know.
I have no idea.
How do you watch a kid get shot and not do something about it?
So we pan to an older woman who ends up with an invitation to a banquet to celebrate heroes of the war. Her son's not really understanding why she's being invited, but she kind of dismisses it. And so then we end up going back into Isabel's perspective, and she has arrived in Paris and goes to her father to stay with him, and he tries to brush her off. She says, no, I'm staying, you know, whatever the cost. And at the same time, Vianne is also getting replies from her husband of the letters that she had wrote to him. And so she's very overjoyed and excited that he's okay, that he's still alive, like reassures her a little bit that everything's going to be okay, everything's going to work out in the end, you know, kind of like that positive attitude. But at the same time, Isabel meets the resistance and agrees to join. She's told she needs false papers to be able to do so. So she chooses a different name. Well, she doesn't really choose a different name. I think it gets chosen for her, but she ends up getting a different name of Juliet. Now, the last name is pronounced Germaine.
Juliet Gervais.
Oh, auto check then.
What did you say?
Germaine.
It's spelled Gervaise.
Okay, I guess auto corrected it.
Germaine?
I wrote it on
That's
the iPad,
hilarious.
probably auto corrected.
Germaine? That's funny. That's hilarious.
I spelled it and everything.
Yeah, you did. It's Gervais, I believe, is how it's pronounced.
So Vianne is at the school and she starts watching teachers get dismissed. And a lot of them aren't from Jewish heritage. So she starts asking questions. And the soldier kind of stands up to her and was like, "Well, you're dismissed as well." So she starts struggling to get food for the family. However, Captain Beck does assist a little bit in getting her some food to be able to feed. Because obviously, I think he was using her rations to eat, anyways, is my kind of understanding of it. He was
Here's the
like eating
crazy
her
thing.
rations.
The day she goes to the office and he has all that food in his office, I would have been so mad.
Yeah.
My child's starving, and you've got buckets of food in this
Yeah.
room. Yeah, I would have been mad.
So, in Isabel's perspective, she's leaving the bookshop one night that she decides to reopen as kind of like a cover, which I find that weird that they talk about it in one scene and then never talk about it again. I do feel like that was a really good cover for like sharing
Absolutely.
the secrets and stuff like that could have been used more in the story. However, it wasn't significant tremendously. To me, it either needed to not be mentioned or mentioned more.
Reason it became no longer re relevant is because she left.
They could have said what happened to it. You know what I mean? Like,
Yeah.
to me, it would have made more sense if they just said Paris was bombed and the store got destroyed, and so she decided to leave Paris.
Of
You
like
made it
something that
relevant.
wrapped it up too, I agree. Because to me, then my brain was thinking, like, did the Nazis that came in there so often, like, not get suspicious that she just up and vanished, you know? But then maybe everybody just up and vanished all the time because it was war. Like, I agree, I would have liked more context on how it ended.
And as she's leaving, she comes across a downed French airman. She decides to help him hide behind her armoire in her room.
Think he's British.
Once she brings him over to the resistance, she decides to help move more pilots across the mountains. She ends up finding out that Gaton is actually working for her resistance as well. He was actually the one that recommended her to join, which I
Did it
found
not?
kind of sweet.
Okay, you found it sweet. It
Yeah.
pissed me off that
Really?
he knew she joined and did not go talk to her. And she
Well,
caught
yes, I
them
didn't
in
like
that
that
secret
part.
meeting. That made me so mad.
Yeah, I didn't like that, but I did think it was sweet that he had confidence enough for her to join. But I do think he did try to protect her so much with falling in love because he knew kind of how naive she was to it. And so he was trying to protect her. Because I do think if she fell in love with him truly, I think it would have motivated her more to join the resistance as he was. And so I think he was trying to protect her and keep her kind of at home.
I think he underestimated her
He did. He did wholeheartedly.
because the opposite happened. He was like, "No, you need to stay here and be safe, and I'm gonna go join the war." And she was like, "Yeah, no." And then did her own thing. It ended up being he ended up recommend that didn't make sense to me though, that how he recommended her after he just told her she didn't need to join.
Yeah.
That didn't make sense. Granted, he didn't volunteer for her to become the Nightingale. She did that all on her own. She said
Yeah.
she'd take him across and stuff like that. Maybe he just recommended her spreading the flyers. Maybe he thought that was harmless enough that it would keep her involved enough to keep her satisfied. But he clearly underestimated her. Totally. That made me really mad when she got there that day and he was in the back room and he almost wasn't even going to come out. Do you love her or do you not? Just tell us. If you don't love her, that's fine. But like, say that.
With the chest.
Quit playing these games and man up is what I wanted him to do. Felt bad for her.
So uncovering her secret hidey hole and ends up uncovering that he is actually the one that made her false documents for her new identity.
What
And
was your
so
reaction when you read that scene?
I've had mixed feelings. It's sweet that he did that for her and didn't say anything. But at the same time, I was kind of like, I feel like if you really loved your daughter, you kind of would be like, you should not be involved in this. This is dangerous. You know what I mean? Like, just like a typical, like, father protective kind of response. And I didn't feel like he had that at all. It was the opposite. Like, go do it. You're going to be out of my hair. So go ahead and do it. It was kind of how I kind of perceived it a little bit.
I had mixed feelings about it too. I was happy that we learned he was helping the resistance in some form and right under the nose of Nazis. I liked him a little bit better after that.
Agree.
And at the end, I liked him more. But I was still a little disappointed that He kind of acknowledged that he knew she'd probably find a way to get involved. And instead of just being honest with her and ensuring that she was getting involved in a safe way, or, like you said, some sort of protective instinct, he didn't really have that. I think he kind of thought she'd do whatever she wanted and wouldn't listen to him, which is probably accurate, but as a dad, he still should have tried. But it did make me like him a little bit more that he was at least involved in the resistance.
Agreed.
And it made total sense with the back room. When he said she couldn't go in the back room of the library or bookstore, I knew automatically that's what he was doing. I was like, no, that's his spy area or something, because why else couldn't you go back there?
I did think that he was hiding people in the back room too, as like a cover, because like an abandoned bookstore, I feel like would be a good place to like
Yeah,
hide people.
I agree. And then he makes papers. Makes total sense that he used to own a bookstore. Like, that correlated perfectly for me. And I love that he was doing it right under their noses too. That was cool. But they clearly weren't the most intelligent creatures, because everybody was right under their nose.
True. So we end up finding out that her code name is Nightingale, which, as I said earlier, was her last name. And so she
Nope,
starts
not her last name.
her last name, what it meant,
Oh.
the translation of it. Isabel starts traveling with the pilots to go to an old friend of the family and ask for them to help her in taking them over the mountain. After her first successful mission, she employs the financial aid from MI9 to help her start getting the men across the mountains.
Question, isn't it MI6?
I think there's multiple different.
Because I could also be thinking about Mission Impossible. In Mission Impossible, they're MI6.
Yeah, I think there's MI6, and then I've heard like MI6 and MI5 before, but I don't know. Let me know
Okay.
if you do, because if so, we need to talk, because you may know some
Yeah.
insider things.
British intelligence, we have some information for you. No, I would like to know which one's right, though, because I just assumed Mission Impossible was right when they called him MI6. And if it's not right, I need to probably stop
I think
calling them that.
MI6 is in a lot of like British spy movies. So I don't know if they exist. I just know that
Oh, it exists. Whether it's called MI6 or not, it exists. That's like the KGB. That's the Russian version. And it absolutely exists. And somebody the other day told me that they're naming their child with those initials. And I was like, I'm not going to burst your bubble. That's a Russian spy organization. I'll just let you do your thing.
My brother's spells barf.
Oh, I've had some bad ones. In our documents, we put initials of minors. So that's how I see a lot of initials. And I'm always like, ooh, you did not spell that out before you named them. So, fun fact, please do that. Write your child's initials before you confirm a name that you'd like to do. Because I've had HOE. Now that child's a hoe for the rest of their life. That's not good. Don't do that to your kid. I've had SOB. Now that child's a son of a bitch. Don't do that to your kid. Think about it. So it's just food for thought. And on that topic, what you name your kid, think about possible nicknames and the meanest thing that you could call your kid. Because kids will do that before you decide on a name. Because some of y'all need to rethink.
So
Sorry.
we go back, and she has actually been left for the winter by goes to travel home for a few weeks to visit his family. She's really struggling through the winter, almost like starving herself to have enough food for Sophie to eat. And luckily, she does pass out whenever Captain Beck does appear back, and he takes her inside and forces her to eat. She's neglecting herself. She ends up discovering Rachel one day because Sarah comes over and tells Vian something's wrong with her mom. She ends up discovering Rachel's extremely depressed, and she's almost like given up on life because she see ends up finding out that she was told that they needed to sew Jewish stars into their clothing, and she's just kind of given up at life. At the same time, Isabel does get a desk job sorting through Jewish people's names and other items. She ends up finding out that they're rounding up Jewish people, and she tries to rescue some of her neighbor's kids. However, the lady refuses to let them come with her, and they get deported along with her. Beck actually steps up and warns Vian that Rachel and her family doesn't need to be home the next day. And so she does try to take Rachel's family to a checkpoint, and Germans open fire. His daughter Sarah ends up getting killed, and Vian is forced to bury her best friend's daughter for her. And so it is an extremely sad moment. That was one part where I did cry because I was just like, man, that would just be terrible to have that where you almost think you're at safety and then all of a sudden you lose one of your children instead. So they end up hiding out, Rachel and her child, Ari, in the bar. Vian thinks that they're all in clear, so Rachel and her start going out so she can take a shower. And at the same time, a man ends up arriving to deport Rachel. And she asks Vian to keep her son, Ari, because he's a local-born Jew, so they're allowing them to stay. So she follows Rachel to the station, and she ends up coming across Captain Beck, who is whipping people as they're loaded onto trains. She kind of... Yeah.
Did you ever think that Captain Beck might have lied about the timeline?
Not really. Because I thought that was brave of him to do so, knowing, like, because here is my thought process. Because if she did successfully get away, great. She got through the state free. But if she didn't, and she kept her hidden, he was going to have to figure out some kind of way to keep covering that up. So I feel like that was a risk on his part. But I don't feel like it was going to be malicious, then he would have had no reason to say anything at all.
So you don't think it was a coincidence that night they decided to open fire on the people, and then the actual guy coming to the house to seize her happened to be perfect timing for when they thought they were safe and she got out?
The open fire thing didn't throw anything, because they did that multiple times previously that we've read about. So that part I didn't think any correlation. I did think it was really weird timing though, whenever the guy showed up. However, there was no way for him to know that her and Rachel were exactly walking out of the barn at that moment, you know, to come across, you know what I mean? Like it didn't indicate Beck was there watching them or anything like that. So I don't feel like that was the case. It could just be a coincidence.
It did make me more suspicious of Beck, though. It made me concerned that maybe he was playing her more than we knew.
The only part that also kind of made me think that is that Beck does agree to help her get false papers for Ari, so that way she could cover that up. If he hadn't have done that, I probably would have been a little bit more suspicious. But since he did basically risk his life and job with covering up for Rachel and trying to keep her safe, and then on top of it also covering up Ari and keeping him under wraps, he did it all the way to the end. That kind of made me sway a different way.
I thought it was strange though, because he knew what she had wanted to name her son that died, or maybe she did name the son and then he died. Mm-hmm. Time of events where, but he knew things like that, as if he had looked into her history. I don't know, it was weird. I kind of thought, well, at the time, Ari wasn't the target. He is a child. So I wondered if maybe he felt remorse for what happened, and that's why I helped with Ari or something, you know? It made me a little suspicious. It definitely made me really upset when Sarah got shot and then Vian had to bury her and then had to watch Rachel be hoarded onto the train. That was when we really took a turn towards sadness for me. I mean, I was still angry, but it was like, I honestly felt like Vian, just so exhausted. And like, where do you go from here? Do you know what I mean? I don't know.
I think my hardest part of comprehension, I guess you can say, of this book, other than the first two chapters, was for the fact that it was so quick for everything to go through emotionally. So, I mean, she was emotional about her husband being captive, but she really couldn't focus on that because she was starving. She couldn't really focus on starving because Sarah got shot. Then she lost her job too. And then she couldn't really focus on Sarah being shot because her best friend was being deported. And then she couldn't really focus on that because she had to now watch her best friend's son and keep him safe and make sure that everybody knew the story. And then on top of it, she's having this soldier that's supposed to be mean, be nice to her. It was just like so much of no time to process whatsoever. I know people say that war makes people hard. Maybe that's what they mean. They have no time to process the emotions that they're feeling, so they just shut down, which makes complete sense just because it was a lot in a few chapters that happened emotionally. I was even getting like whiplash, because even like her finding Beck whipping people was just like really like whiplash back to, oh, now he's helping me cover up this child to make sure he doesn't get saved. So it was almost like a gaslighting situation where you're just like, oh no, look over here, but now look over here. It was very hard for me as a reader to process all those emotions. So I can only imagine a person in that kind of situation as well.
No, I definitely agree. How did you feel about the allegations that her and Beck Like the people were thinking they were intimate and stuff like that. What did that make you feel?
To be honest, I kind of brushed over it because people are gonna do that even nowadays in that kind of scenario. If you had nosy neighbors, that scene where you, as a married woman, had somebody else move into your home, especially here in the South, you would have somebody talking about it. It would be a topic of conversation. So
I
I just
agree.
kind of brush it off as a normal thing that people do just because they're nosy people that like to be in each other's business and start gossip. But I did think that Ari showing up was a little suspicious in flaming the gossip fire, which, I mean, obviously they've seen her every day. They've seen she wasn't pregnant and stuff like that. But I could see how they would be like, oh, no, this is something new to gossip about. She has this random child all of a sudden. And especially when she keeps him a secret for some time before introducing him to the public, it did kind
Yeah.
of fuel that a little bit, I think, more than it
I
should.
agree. And then were you shook that like these rumors even got so far as to get to Isabel?
No, because the resistance was a part of that town, as the resistance she was a part of started in that town almost, and then expanded to the Paris one. So I felt like naturally they're going to, especially when she had Henry looking after her sister, he's going to pay attention to the rumors surrounding her and making sure that she's not at risk for something. Naturally, when you're in that kind of scenario, that would be what you're paying attention to make sure that there's no whisperings of her being like a secret betrayer or anything like that. So I feel like that would be a natural thing if she's asking somebody to look after her sister to kind of say something about.
Okay. I thought it's crazy that these people are starving. We would make these allegations that she might be sleeping with a German soldier, and then, like, nobody, for example, like, spit at her or cuss at her. None of that really happened. So I guess I didn't understand why that was even really part of the book, to be quite frank. I thought that's where it was leading, was some altercation. I was surprised that it got all the way back to Isabel, that these men were gossiping about it so far that it got back to Isabel. And that kind of shook me a little bit. I feel like they have a lot more things to be worried about than whether or not Vianne is sleeping with the German soldier.
So I have kind of some opinions with that. But
Okay.
back to what you were saying about spitting first. So they got the radios taken away. Their newspapers are taken away, their phones, everything. So like that's their form of entertainment to keep them from fully concentrating on them starving to death. But at the same time, I don't think they
Yeah.
have a lot of energy to put into it because they're starving to death. So it's almost like kind of a double whammy with that. But as far as with the whole situation with gossiping, I kind of sort of wondered if Beck, as like to keep his cover of like he's like a harsh, person, he's like, yeah, I've been sleeping with my chick that I've been boarded up with. And so that's where it's kind of snowballed as well.
Well, that's interesting because if that's the case, that could have led to why the next guy chose her. Interesting theory.
That was my thought.
I wouldn't be surprised. I think most men would, if someone assumed that, I think they'd go along with it in general, to be honest, much less at times of war where you're trying to save face with German soldiers. That's interesting. Yeah, I could see that.
Isabel ends up finding a down pilot and he's been injured. She ends up close to Vianne's house and decides to take him into the cellar.
Which again, I would have liked better context on how close. How are they that close? I don't understand.
And so Beck ends up increasingly angry because they can't find this pilot. He starts going out. I think it seemed like a timeline of like maybe 2 days where he was like out all day one day looking for them and then like tore apart the house or the town the next day and then ends up deciding to go into the cellar. When they open up the door, the pilot has died, but Isabel is still in there. Isabel takes the gun that was hidden in the cellar and shoots back. At the same time, Vianne like hits him upside the head with a shovel. So Vianne
Yes,
actually
she
thinks,
does.
yeah, which she actually thinks she kills him instead of the giant bullet hole that's protruding from his body. And so at the same time, Beck ends up shooting and hitting Isabel. And so Vianne and Gaetan ends up helping her escape to help recover, and they also bury Beck at the same time. And Vianne ends up agreeing to stay behind and playing the dumb woman because she doesn't believe that they'll ever believe that she was capable of killing anybody. And so she ends up telling Isabel never to come back because she consistently keeps putting her family in danger, which is true. She does make a lot of decisions without, I don't think, processing that Vianne and her daughter and now son are at risk.
I would agree, and especially that scene. Like earlier in the book, I didn't think she was intentionally doing it to risk their life. I think she thought, like, she kept getting away with it, so I think she kind of brushed over it. At this point, when she brings that soldier to the cellar, I think she did know she was risking, but I think she accepted that risk and was going to accept responsibility and the risk on her and say, you know, her sister didn't have any idea. I don't think she thought her sister was going to have an idea. I don't think she thought her sister was going to be at risk. I think she knew she might be on that property and could be like, no, she didn't even know we were here. I agree, though, that it was careless to bring that man to that house with those two children inside, which at that time she didn't know about Ari. She only knew about the daughter, but still the one daughter was enough.
Yeah.
If it was just Vianne, I might say differently. She's an adult, but the kids, that didn't work with me either.
So flashing into the most recent perspective, the older woman has decided she is going to Paris to the banquet and ends up kind of trying to sneak onto a flight where her son ends up catching her. Vianne joins the cause in helping children find refuge under the watchful eye of an evil German now living in her home since Beck was killed. Isabel is captured as the Nightingale, and they don't know she's the Nightingale, though. And her father goes to sacrifice himself to save her. Isabel is sent to a concentration camp where she hopes she survives.
Again, dumb. This woman is withstanding torture that some of your men probably couldn't do in 30 seconds. And you're going to tell me you never even had a second thought as to, hey, she might be the Nightingale.
Mm-hmm.
Idiots.
So Vianne is dragged in for questioning, and Von Richter, I believe is how the guy's name is pronounced. I'm not going to try to pronounce whatever his title is, because there is no way I'm going to get that one right.
It's spelled Sturmbannfuher.
Mm-hmm.
Fuher, I think, is the last part, because that's what they called Hitler, I believe. Fuher. Essentially, he is like, so Captain Beck was a captain, and he is even higher than him.
Probably like a sergeant or something.
I think so. That's my understanding. But he was definitely higher up than Beck, and Beck was already a captain.
She ends up being fondled by him during the questioning. And he ends up saying, it's unfortunate that Captain Beck has gone missing, but now I'm going to be moving into your home in his place. And so at the same time, Isabel is recovering with Gaetan, and she ends up confessing her love for him again. She realizes that he has not said it back. They continue to use the time almost like a vacation from the war, where they end up having a little bit of like a sexcapade during the week that they're alone. Vivian, at the same time, after she's released, ends up saving a boy from being deported. As she's trying to bring him back to her home, Von Richter ends up coming across her, and she says that, you know, his mom died of a disease, and he was like, keep that out of your home, like, take him somewhere else. So she ends up deciding to take him to the Catholic Church. And as she's there, she kind of starts speaking to the mother that's on staff there, and she ends up telling her that, you know, there's plenty more room for children if she wishes to bring them. And so she ends up going to Isabel's rebellion group there in the town to try to get false documents to hide these children. They end up telling her kind of, hey, we're booked up dealing with what we're dealing with, but you're welcome to try to create these false documents yourself. So she starts practicing inside of a Bible, which was really risky in her home, but obviously I'm sure that he did not have the same beliefs as she did, so he probably would never pick up the Bible. But she ends up getting those documents, and Von Richter ends up informing Vianne that they're going to start invading the free zone. She can't believe it's happening. I think at that point it finally hit her, like, this is too close to home. This is too much happening. I think it really came from Sarah being killed is where it kind of all started snowballing for her. At that point, when she realized nowhere was safe, she was panicked almost.
I agree. I think the children is sort of what did it for her too. I think it was like a very motherly instinct. And I will say, it lived rent free in my brain, where she's written the three different names that she needs in order to reconnect these children back to their parents. I'm gonna cry thinking about it. But the reality that we know and how the book ends, and the way that so many in the vast majority did not survive these camps, and these children were displaced permanently, and even taken away from the family that they might have known during the war, like Ari was, is so heartbreaking. But I love that she even had the thought to do this in case one of them did survive, in case they needed to be able to find them and locate them and get that new name and stuff. But oh my gosh, I might have cried. This is the second most crying I think I did, was this part right here with that harsh reality of like, it probably won't even be used. But.
As Isabel is recovering, she ends up getting news from that he reveals that he's leaving to work for the rebellion in bombing. And she kind of has this harsh reality of like, oh, I've got to go back to what all is left. Henry is arrested, and Von Richter is interrogating Vivi or Vianne for knowing him, and kind of threatens her kids. And kind of just extra trigger warning, this scene does have where he does end up raping her. And so she kind of gets that almost every day until the end of the war. Isabel is doing runs to keep these men passing over the mountains. And as she stops at her family friend's home, it's whenever they are arrested and captured. However, I do want to point out that dude that was always there, I do find it very suspicious that he was outside and they made a comment that he was outside, like getting everything prepared. And the next thing you know, them like all these soldiers arrive.
It did seem shady.
I did find that a little odd that you mentioned it like that. It seemed like too much of a coincidence to like point out. However, when the lady was also there in the concentration camp, I was like, okay, well, maybe it wasn't planned that way. But at first, I definitely did think that maybe she got ratted out by the family friend.
Yeah, I got nervous too, and it was shady. And like, why did they pick that house, and who did they think they were going to get? You know what I mean? And if they didn't realize that she was a Nightingale, why was it targeted? I was wondering. I wanted more context there too. I agree.
Vianne's father arrives to tell her that Isabel has been captured and he's going to try to free her. She gets a letter from him, which was kind of a letdown. It wasn't as big of like a declaration as I had hoped for. She ends up like basically telling him to be safe and asks him to not go, but he does end up so anyways. So when Isabel's father ends up coming to rescue her, he tries to declare that he's the Nightingale, and she then comes back and says, "No, I'm the Nightingale." And of course, they believed the father more because he was a man. And so he ends up being taken outside and killed by a firing squad, and
This
then left.
old crippled man.
And then left in like a fountain, like on display almost, which was even worse. So Isabel is end up being transported to a concentration camp for being a war criminal. Back home, Vianne has kind of learned of all this news, and at the same time, she's still being raped by the German, and she ends up finding out that she is pregnant with his child. The Germans are pulling out of the town, and so Vianne ends up kind of getting an inkling in the middle of the night to like wander down the street, and comes across her husband Anton, who has escaped prison to come home to her. She ends up deciding not to tell Anton that the baby isn't his, which I think he kind of had an inkling, to be honest. I don't think it was a secret really, but I think it's just one of those things that let's not acknowledge what we've been through. Let's just move forward.
I agree.
Isabel is in the camps trying to survive through the camp on her last leg, basically at the point, and she has a really bad fever that won't break, and she ends up being sent home by her friend. So the war is kind of over at this point, and so Vianne ends up going to the Red Cross to give them the names of the children she saved to try to find their families. Some men end up coming looking for Daniel or Ari, Rachel's son, and they tell Vianne that he has family in America that they're sending him to live with so that way he can grow up in the Jewish heritage. Vianne's like, well, I'm the only person that he's ever known, so like, don't take him from me. Unfortunately, they do. He ends up leaving. Isabel ends up showing up, and so Isabel and Vianne end up reading the letter that their father had left for them, finally confessing his love to them and telling them how proud he was of them and everything. And trigger warning for emotion for sure at this point. Gaetan ends up returning for Isabel, and so she kind of falls into his arms, and it almost implies that they live happily ever after. And we end up going back into the old woman's perspective, where she's arrived in Paris and she ends up going into the banquet, and the lady is Vianne, and she gives a speech about Isabel and how much she contributed to the cause, and that she actually ended up dying in Gaetan's arms that day when he returned. And then even later, her daughter ends up dying of cancer. Sophie does. So two big losses. And then she ends up at the banquet coming across Gaetan, and he has named his daughter Isabel after her.
I'm over here trying to hold it together.
I know you
From the way that I wanted to murder Von Richter to the end when we find out that he named his daughter Isabel and that Sophie also died. Like, I read this whole book thinking that the older woman was Isabel and committed to the fact that she got her happy ever after. Mm-hmm. And when I found out she didn't, like, let me tell you, I sobbed. Emily was on the phone and I had to mute her. Because she hadn't read it yet. So I had to mute her. And I was like, into my hand. And then she'd ask me a question. And I'd have to unmute, be like, hang on just a second. And like, get myself together. And then answer whatever she said. It was so bad. And I was like, Emily, I'm going to have to get off the phone, honey. I'm trying to read this. And I'm having an emotional breakdown right now. Oh, it was.
My biggest thing was, like, I had prepared myself the whole time for one of them to die in a concentration camp.
Yes.
So, like, I had mentally prepared myself for that moment. And so to then get the inkling that she was going to live happily ever after and she wasn't going to die in that concentration camp, it was just, like, world crushing down because I didn't prepare myself for that, like, where she almost had it and it got taken away from her still.
Yep.
Like, it was so hard. Like, I was not mentally prepared for it whatsoever. I hysterically bawled. I won't say it was as bad as the last letter, but I cried so hard. I was just like, oh, God. And then he named his daughter Isabel, and then she ends up coming across Ari, and he thanks her for everything.
And he was like, I never forgot y'all. Like, oh, my gosh. Listen, it was so emotional.
And then the fact that Sophie wasn't there to see him. Again, like, that broke my heart.
Well, I was mad that we didn't know more about how her life turned out. I understand she didn't die of old age, but she was probably in her 60s when she passed away with cancer. Yeah. So she had to have lived another 50 years after this, and we don't get any of those details. So that made me mad, because I was like, no, I want to know what happened to Sophie. What were the effects of the war on her? Was the cancer because of it? That's just something I wanted to know more about. Yeah. And we never got that information. I was mad that Isabel didn't get her happy ever after. After everything, she didn't get it. That made me mad. The fact that she waited until he found her to die in his arms was, like, just sobbing. But it was so good. And again, if you haven't read this book, read this book. Mm-hmm. When I tell you, it's such a fascinating way to think about. Again, just like the blurb said, we don't tell women's story for war. We just don't do that. That's not who we believe is important. That's not the story that we tell most of the time. So this is an entirely different perspective that you probably haven't heard. I hadn't heard it. And so it was really neat.
Wars, women are the silent heroes. They were the people behind the door. Staying at home and taking on men's jobs. That to me is heroic, that they stepped up and were having to take care of things at home and in different aspects as well.
I agree. Well, most of your medical staff and your nurses, that's all women too, usually. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people want to compare, like, this is what men did in the war, and this is what women did. Look at this. This is much harder. And I don't think that's what it's about. I think it's about both of the contributions that were made, and they're different jobs, but they're both equally important.
One couldn't have happened without the other.
I wholeheartedly agree with that, because, and a lot of people say that specifically for, like, America, when the Vietnam War, or maybe it was one of these world wars. Anyways, one of the wars really triggered women to take jobs to sustain the economy and keep the nation moving while the men were at war, which was an entirely new thing to women. Mm-hmm. Women weren't allowed to have jobs before that. So now they have to. It was very interesting getting to read a woman's story, especially like was it? Okay, this same scenario. Great. Yeah. So in my brain too, it was nice to see French women's stories, because I had never even considered what happened in France. It was always the Germans, the Nazis, what we might have done a part of it, and the Jews. That's only the three aspects I had ever looked at. So now getting another country's perspective as well, that was really interesting.
For sure.
But yeah.
So what is your final thoughts and ratings?
Okay. Y'all know I normally wait until now to decide what number I'm gonna rate it, like a little psychopath, because I don't really rate books. That's not like how my brain works for them. But let me tell you this. As soon as I finish this book, I told Emily, it is a 5-star read. I think everybody needs to read it. And just like the blurb said that it's a novel for everyone, a novel for a lifetime. I wholeheartedly agree with that. This was such a good read that I'm considering reading other historical fictions. And I'm telling you, that is not my genre. I do think it helped being a woman's story because I'm naturally, obviously, more engaged and more interested in that. But gosh, when I tell y'all, it is so good. Get past those first 10 chapters, it picks up. Read this book
Yes.
wholeheartedly. This has probably been, and this is crazy. This has probably been my favorite read that we've read for the podcast.
Wow.
Was that good. And I'm picky. I don't
And
know, y'all.
we read ACOTAR.
Well, yes. But this also, I think, like, and no offense to ACOTAR, because I love Sarah. This is not an insult at all. But this is about a real world scenario. You know what I mean? Like, it actually happened. It could happen again. And so I just think it hits a little bit more home because it did happen. It's not a fictional world of fairies, which is much fun, but this was my favorite read for the podcast, hands down.
Wow.
What about you?
So I liked it a lot. My rating was not 5 stars just because of those first 10 chapters. The writing was really well done. The storyline was told very well. Even like the triple perspective that was happening with both Isabel and with Vian, and then with the older lady, it was very well transitioned, where it was very well to understand who you were reading. I think that she wrote each one almost like natural to themselves. It wasn't like, oh, you're getting a little bit of Isabel here in Vian's story, or you're getting a little bit of Vian and Isabel's story. It was very true to each character as you were reading them. I don't think it's easy to do,
I
but
wholeheartedly agree, especially considering the old woman was one of the other two characters, and we couldn't ascertain the entire time who it was based on the writing. So, yeah, I agree.
And so I do have to say it did get point off for that. So I did rate it a 4.9. If that first 10 chapters had caught my attention right away and it wasn't just like drag, it took me 4 days to read the first 10 chapters. And then as soon as I got through those, it took me a whole day to finish reading the rest of it. So it was very quick read once it picked up, but it was so drawn on. I know there's been three or four people that I know once we announced the book said that they had DNF'd, and I was like, no, just keep reading it. It's worth it. I do know it is kind of hard not to, because we almost did it, but it was so worth it. Like it to me was one of the top ones that we've read so far for the podcast, for sure. It wasn't the top one for me, but it was definitely up there. I just think that it's important for us as people in understanding what happened in the past, so it doesn't happen again in the future. Even though this is
Wholeheartedly.
a fiction book, some of the stories are probably based on true stories or other people's stories. It puts a lot into perspective, both in Vivian's point of view, where she was almost complacent to what was happening before it actually hit her doorstep, and then Isabel, who was gung ho that it was gonna end up that way beforehand. But it almost gave you that perspective of what the world could look like and how horrid the different things and people can be if you give them that opportunity to be so. So I think it's very important to educate yourself, even if it's in a fictional concept, of what could be and what could have happened differently and things like that, life.
No, I wholeheartedly agree. And I think that's part of why it made it such a good read for me, too, because it is so real. And honestly, it probably barely even touches on what women experienced in this era. But I did appreciate getting two different perspectives, too, like Isabel's story and Vian's story, and the different ways that women might have impacted the war and experienced the war.
Tortured in different ways.
Yes, and the different horrors that they faced, but still the repercussions that then came from those horrors. Yeah, I totally love that. It was just so good. Get past the first 10 chapters, and I'm telling you will not regret it. And I don't think the first 10 chapters were per se bad. I think I went in with a different assumption. I think I was like thinking it was going to be like action packed from the beginning. And so when it was kind of slow building up in those first 10 chapters, I got kind of bored because I kept waiting for the war. Like that's what in the back of my mind, I'm just thinking war and action. I think that
The
is what,
thrill.
yes, the adrenaline rush, the
Yes.
concern. Like I thought I would just be immediately immersed in that world, which, like you said earlier, there were instances before the war. We have to understand the context before the war. So it makes sense to have 10 chapters that lead us up to it. But in my brain, I was just ready to dive right in. If you have not read this book, you absolutely should. I was trying to look it up, but I can't remember the woman's name. I do believe it is loosely based off of a real woman's story. It is historical fiction, but it's really not. It's only fiction because these people didn't actually exist. But what happened, what they experienced, that's probably a touch of what happened and what they experienced. So I highly encourage everyone to read this. All ages and all genders, races, everything. I think this would benefit everybody to read.
Agreed.
So if you liked this episode or any of our other episodes, please subscribe to get access to bloopers, extra content, and more on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Patreon, YouTube, and just about every other platform that you can listen to podcasts on.
So you can also send us book suggestions, comments, or general inquiries to our email at likewereadthem@carlwithakmpodcast.com. Our new release schedule, just a reminder, will be on the 1st, 3rd, and 5th, if there is one, Friday of each month. We will also be including random bonus episodes on Patreon under subscription-based content only. And these bonus episodes will include arcs, games, theories, additional books, Marvels, movies, and more. We hope to bring you this extra content on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok as well. However, it'll just be snippets here and there of those kind of content. So you will also now start getting early access to our book in the end of our episodes. So if you tune into the end of each one of them, you'll find out a few days before everybody else when we make our official announcements on social media.
Our next book is The Silent Patient by Alex McCaidley.
Ladies.
Sorry, Alex, we just butchered your name, but
Yes, sorry.
it's on the screen if you'd like to look it up or on our post. And this episode will actually be released on October 4th to kick off our October month. I'm going to read the little excerpt from the back. Alicia Berenson's life is seemingly perfect until one night when her husband Gabriel returns home late from work and Alicia shoots him 5 times in the face and then never speaks another word. Alicia's refusal to talk or give any kind of explanation turns a domestic tragedy into a mystery that captures the public imagination. The Silent Patient is hidden away from the tabloids at The Grove, a secure psychiatric unit in North London. Criminal psychotherapist Theo Faber is captivated by Alicia's story and jumps at the opportunity to work with her. His determination to get her to talk and unravel the mystery of why she shot her husband will take him down a path more unexpected and more terrifying than he ever imagined. So you absolutely should tune in to hear this story. Please read this book. It's a good one as well. We do appreciate you turning into this episode and lasting this long to hear our thoughts. And as always, we promise to Carl them like we read them.